Hello, Laura Tallis here with Associated Catholic Charities. Thank you for joining us for the Mission to Move event. This is the third out of five podcasts around the topic of workforce development. So Brian Trees, the Associate Administrator of Gallagher Services, is here to specifically address workforce development for those living with intellectual and/or developmental disabilities. So thank you for joining me, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, I'm not an expert in workforce development by any means, but I wanted to learn more about this topic. So can you share what your background is?
Sure. So like you shared, I'm the Associate Administrator at Gallagher Services. We're part of Catholic Charities Family Services Division, and I've worked for Catholic Charities for 21 years. Truly enjoy being a part of charities. I feel like we're very mission-oriented organization, value-driven, certainly committed to the Baltimore community. Prior to working with Catholic Charities, I worked with teenagers who are at risk, mostly in the Midwest. And before that, my background really was in management consulting. I have a master's in public management from Carnegie Mellon and then a MBA from Loyola University.
Oh, fantastic. So let's get into our questions. First of all, can you tell us more about the state of employment for this population?
Sure. So historically, people with intellectual disabilities have been marginalized with employment, although there are and have been major improvements. But in the past, people in a lot of cases were sent to what are called sheltered workshops, which are basically where people came in and sat at a long table and did assembly type work on, you know, nuts and bolts and that kind of thing. And they were paid on a piecework basis and with very little pay. And that was pretty much what the expectations were at that time. Also, there were sort of the go-to jobs of pretty much entry-level jobs in janitorial or kitchen or landscaping or grocery stores, some of those things that a lot of people think of when they think of people with intellectual disabilities having jobs. And those jobs may be good for a particular person, but there's often no career ladder or opportunity for advancement. And one of the things that we've seen is oftentimes people who are really good employees are the first to get let go in a downturn, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So, right. That's kind of been what's been happening nationally. The employment rate for people with intellectual disabilities for competitive jobs is just 20%. That's employment rate. Mm-hmm. So for the remaining 80%, over half of those people aren't working but want to work. And then in Maryland, sort of in our local state, there's 3,000 people with intellectual disabilities who are on the waiting list for employment services, and about another 11,000 who could work but aren't. So that's kind of what's been happening, but it is changing, and there's good reason for optimism. What we're finding and seeing is with more employer engagement and a different approach with employers, we're seeing people with intellectual disabilities succeed in more skilled and higher paying jobs. So for example, Microsoft employs people with autism who do computer programming and coding. Another example that I like is Cincinnati Children's Hospital has a training program for people with intellectual disabilities where they become operating room sterilization technicians. Mm-hmm. Drug companies have been employing people with intellectual disabilities as pharmacy assistants. And then there's, I also kind of like this job where people with intellectual disabilities who are very detail-oriented and focused are proofreaders for medical transcriptions. So we're seeing sort of a movement to people getting better, higher-paying jobs and really offering more. And those are all good things. Some advocates say that the opportunity to work is a civil right, and I agree with that. Mm. To me, a way of looking at it is for anybody, when you meet somebody for the first time, there's, you know, typical questions like, you know, what's your name? Where do you live? But one of the top three is usually, what do you do? So for a person with an intellectual disability, if they're meeting somebody and they go through the, you know, hi, my name is, and this is where I live, and then somebody says, well, what do you do? And they are one of those 11,000 who aren't working but want to work and aren't doing anything at the time, when they get to that question in the conversation, there's just a big silence and a big vacuum. So you have to wonder how that person feels about that. Really, part of our identity is what we do. So if we don't have work and productivity as part of our day, we're missing a major component of our lives and our identity. And then I think also a lot of this conversation really hinges on whether you feel that people with intellectual disabilities can work and be successful in jobs. And frankly, there are some people who don't, and that maybe either because they have some sort of bias or they just haven't had enough experience with people with intellectual disabilities. But we can help with that in terms of partnering with companies, and not just as part of a hiring decision, but also as part of a longer term relationship. So that's kind of what's going on nationally and then also in the state of Maryland.
All right, so my next question is, how do these individuals fit into the labor market, and what are the benefits that employers have by employing those with intellectual and developmental disabilities?
Pre-COVID, there was very low unemployment and really not enough workers for available jobs. It was something like there were 7 million job vacancies and only 4 million available workers. Mm-hmm. And during that time, employers really needed to, there wasn't a big enough pool of available workers. So employers were out of necessity looking at people who may have had more barriers to employment than others. With people with intellectual disabilities, the issue always is getting the right job for the right person. And in the pre-COVID environment, there were many opportunities for people with intellectual disabilities. Now, in the sort of in the COVID world, we need to remind ourselves that people with intellectual disabilities may have limitations in some areas, but they have extraordinary capabilities in others. And there are needs in the marketplace, and people with intellectual disabilities are an available resource. So benefits to employers are well documented. Accenture, which is a big research company, a recruiting company, has a report that a lot of people look at. And really what they surveyed was large companies, and they compared them to their peers based on a number of factors. But basically what they found was the companies that they call disability champions, who are inclusive of people with intellectual disabilities and also other groups, have, these are statistics, but 28% higher revenue compared to their peers, double the net income, and 30% more profit. And then also, there's clear research that shows, and then you can also see it anecdotally, that more inclusive companies do better. So for example, hiring people with disabilities demonstrates your corporate commitment to your values. People who are coming to work and highly motivated and wanting to work at their jobs raises the overall productivity of the company. Inclusive company cultures attract then other people, the right talent pool, and then also the company has an improved image in the community. So those are, by hiring people with intellectual disabilities, those are clearly benefits that go back to the employer. One thing, really important point I think to make, is when supporting a person with an intellectual disability and getting employed, there has to be real benefit in terms of the return on investment to the employer. That's counterintuitive to some people who will say, well, what about the person with the intellectual disability? Shouldn't our focus be on them and getting them a job? And of course, we want that. But the reality is, if the job doesn't, if the hire doesn't work for the employer, it won't last, and it harms the new hire, and it also hires the employer. So the hire has to make good business sense.
Wonderful. So with the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, what does the future look like for this population gaining employment?
Well, it's certainly a new world. And really what we're seeing is, this is an opportunity to pivot, to make a pivot. we're relying on what's called an employer engagement model of job development, which is different than what happens in a lot of cases. It's really a demand side job development model. Typically what happens a lot of times is there's a supply side model, which is where you say, okay, these are all these people that we're trying to help get jobs. Now let's go out to companies and ask them, are you hiring or will you hire? That's a supply side approach. A demand side approach is going to the businesses first to really understand their needs and do detailed assessments of their jobs, their actual discrete jobs. And then with that information, going back to the people with intellectual disabilities who are looking for jobs and looking for someone who has the skills that match the needs for that particular job. So that model works in any kind of economic environment, and it also works for any group of people, really. It's a different approach. It's not especially complicated. It's hard to do, well. It gets away from the online applications and resumes, which in most cases aren't effective at all for people with intellectual disabilities, and lots of other people too. I mean, what we see is, what I've heard is, there's 250 online applications for just one job, and then only 2% of the online applications that come in even get looked at. So those, clearly, that model, that supply side online kind of model does not work. The employer engagement model is different. It's really about engaging employers through warm leads, never cold leads, getting to understand those their specific jobs in a detailed way, then going back to the people who you're trying to help get jobs and see if there's a match. If there is a match, then you go back to the employer and say, I think I have a potential match. Can we talk about this person? And you talk about the person with the employer. You might identify some potential wrinkles, like maybe the person uses public transportation, and that may be a challenge for them to get to work at one time. So how can we work that out? It's not really the person's fault, but with the employer, is there a way that we can work this out? We could offer the agency supporting the person with looking for employment could offer a no-fee job trial to the employer. And then if all that looks good, then the employer could make a hiring decision. So, and what we would do, the agency would be to continue providing post-hire supports like job training or wraparound supports, maintain regular contact. If there's a problem, we troubleshoot it quickly. But what that does is it helps the employer. First of all, they have less recruiting costs. They're getting an employee who's specifically tailored and targeted for that specific job. They've already seen the person do that job, and then they have an agency standing behind the person to help with on-the-job training and just kind of ongoing assessment of performance. So there really are, that's the model that works best with people with intellectual disabilities. And I think in the new COVID world, that model is more important than ever. What we're taking a close look at is where we think jobs will be in the future. And what we're seeing is one of the biggest areas is in the direct care, professional and personal care aid market. So that's really basically human services workers. Before COVID, there's always been a shortage of workers in this field. And right now, those workers, that's the projected to be the highest growing, fastest growing job need of all jobs. The next closest is software developers. So what we're doing is we're thinking that that's a demonstrated need. It's only going to continue growing as healthcare goes more to home health and less congregate settings. So what we're trying to do is establish partnerships with nursing homes, long-term care, retirement communities, agencies that support people with intellectual disabilities or other kind of disabilities, because we really see that that need is there. Certainly people with intellectual disabilities have a role in sort of managing this what we're experiencing with COVID and kind of going beyond it. So that's what we see. It's a difficult time, but we also see that there's some real opportunities that we can take advantage of.
Absolutely. And do you have any examples of the employment engagement method turning out really well and, you know, success with that?
Sure. One that comes to mind is last summer, I had lunch with the owner of a concrete company, and his business was doing really well. I was not in any way asking him, are you hiring? Will you hire? I have this person in mind. It was more to just listen and hear about what was happening in his business. And basically his business was doing very, very well. One of the things that he said is, you know, one of my frustrations or concerns is that I have this crew that's going out and putting in a concrete driveway or a parking lot. And that means that we excavate, then we go in and pour concrete. And then after that, we pull the wood frames and do the, you know, put the soil back and plant the grass and sweep everything up, and then we're finished. And a challenge for him was quality is what he considers to be the differentiator between him and other companies. And the way that a job is left is very important to him. His frustration was that he would have a crew there, and to do that last 20%, he would have a $45 or $50 an hour heavy equipment operator helping with that, instead of going on to the next job and starting the excavation process. So what we did was we had people who we support who trained with that company and went out and were doing the finishing work. So they would, at the end of a job, they would go and pull the wood forms and they'd pull the concrete in and put the soil back, plant seed, sweep everything up, and make the last contact with the customer. And what that allowed the Andy, the owner of the company, to do was maintain his high quality that he wanted, but also allow a better use of his resources, so those really high paid excavation workers could go on to the next job, so he could get more business. And these two people that were hired became a big part of the team that finished the job. So to me, that's an example of the employer engagement model, and it's also an example of the hire has to work for the business. So this concrete business benefited by these folks becoming employees, and the people who were hired benefited because they liked that kind of work. They were good at it. They were very detail oriented. They liked interacting with other people, and from their own sort of personal life, they became a part of that company. So now they go to company functions and they wear the company sweatshirts, and of course they get paid and all those kind of things. So it's really improved the quality of their life. But to me, that's a demonstration of how the model can work. And it's also in areas that by having that conversation and not pushing the, will you hire, what positions do you have open now, but more of a listening and learning, and can we go out and understand the details of that job, then we can find people who are exactly matched for those requirements and start the process of training, hiring, doing all the supports, and pretty much everybody benefits. So I like telling that story.
Definitely. That's really great to hear. Well, thank you, Brian Trees, Associate Administrator of Gallagher Services, for shedding some more light on this topic. And for listeners, if you'd like to hear more, Associated Catholic Charities is releasing more podcasts this week around workforce development as well as other topics. So be sure to check them out, especially while you're getting your steps in. Thank you for listening.